May it please the court. My name is Terrence Harris, and along with Mr. Dennis Sweet, the fourth representative plaintiff, Mr. Buchanan, in this matter.
Before you start talking about the issues, I need some help with just what's before us. I can't tell. Maybe there are 10 or 15 defendants, also A through Z, sued. Yet we're here on a summary judgment that found the claims were precluded or barred by the Supreme Court decision in Hecht and alternatively by qualified immunity. Now, are you here, because I can't tell from your brief, you jump in and out, are you here appealing the summary judgment only as to these three officers, or are you here appealing against every defendant that you sued and every claim that you might have filed?
Your Honor, we're here appealing summary judgment against the officers as well as the city of Gulfport.
All right. What's your basis for your action against the city of Gulfport?
Municipal liability, Your Honor. When the police officers violate a city policy because they were improperly trained, then you can have municipal liability for negligent training.
Well, I don't believe the district court reached that in its summary judgment, did it? All I saw in the summary judgment opinion was on excessive force.
Well, Yetter, I think the district court opinion dismissed the case in total, saying that we couldn't proceed because our case was barred by Heck.
Right.
In the alternative, qualified immunity.
Right. It said in the alternative, qualified immunity provides for a basis for summary judgment. But qualified immunity runs only to the three officers. Qualified immunity doesn't run to all these other defendants you sued, like the police department, the city of Gulfport, the council, city council president, et cetera. So are you conceding that your only claim is against these three officers, either under Hecht or under qualified immunity?
No, Your Honor. I think that if the case is barred by Heck, that means Mr. Buchanan cannot proceed against the city nor the municipality.
So your position is to find for the defendants, we have to find this is under Heck because qualified immunity wouldn't cover all of the defendants.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question, Your Honor.
Your position is if we are going to uphold the summary judgment, we have to base it on Hecht, not on qualified immunity, because qualified immunity provides a defense against liability only to these three officers. In other words, we have to rule on Hecht or the case is not over.
Well, I think that may be right, Your Honor. I think if the court finds that, if the court finds that the case is barred by Hecht, then there's no case.
Right.
Then if the court finds that Heck doesn't apply, but qualified immunity applies to those officers, then I think the case can proceed against the city of Gulfport for negligent hiring.
That's right. The way it would seem to me. That's my confusion, because I don't believe you made that argument in your brief, but I think that's the way it falls out.
Well, Your Honor, although that argument is not made in the brief, as the court is aware, summary judgment is de novo, and the court can look at the entire record as a whole. And if other bases for proceeding or if there's other bases for denying are present within the record, this court can make that determination.
Okay.
Yeah, we here before this court today based upon the lower courts granting a summary judgment for the defendants. The lower court found that Mr. Buchanan's case was barred by the Heck v. Humphrey case, the favorable termination rule, and in the alternative, it was barred by qualified immunity. Now, Mr. Buchanan's case arise out of a tasing, a shooting that took place on June 5th, 2007. Mr. Buchanan was arrested as it relates to certain facts that evening. Now, there's no dispute here today what Heck says and what Heck stands for. There's no dispute about the law with qualified immunity. As this court knows and has written, that a Heck analysis is a factual intensive and highly analytical analysis. And as court knows, in summary judgment, you have to look at the facts to make sure that there's no genuine issues of material disputed facts. Now, with that, we have to look at the facts. On June 5th, 2007, Mr. Buchanan was at the intersection of Highway 49 and Middle Drive in Gulfport, Mississippi. At that time, Officer Parlin, Officer West, and Officer Brandt, they were in an unmarked Chevy Tahoe transporting prisoners. They noticed Mr. Buchanan standing on a corner. They stopped. They got out of their vehicle, which was against Gulfport policy because they was in an unmarked vehicle. They unholstered their service pistol as well as their taser and approached Mr. Buchanan. According to them, at that time, Mr. Buchanan was acting aggressively and he was agitated and he was pointing the bat at him. Mr. Parlin said that he requested Mr. Buchanan to drop the bat. He requested several times. At the point when Officer Ryan Statura appeared in a marked vehicle with blue lights in a regular uniform, as Mr. Statura stated, with brass collars and everything, Mr. Buchanan complied with the order. He dropped the bat. Within seconds of him dropping the bat, he was tased, then he was shot. As a result of that incident, that occurrence, Mr. Buchanan was charged with multiple things. He was charged with disorderly conduct, which was ultimately dismissed. He was also charged with aggravated assault on a police officer. He was taken to trial on aggravated assault on a police officer. He was indicted on it and taken to trial. At the trial, the aggravated assault count to the officer Statura was dismissed. The only count remained was the aggravated assault against Officer Pollard. The jury acquitted Mr. Buchanan of aggravated assault on Officer Pollard. There was also a jury instruction for misdemeanor assault against a peace officer for charging Officer Pollard. He was acquitted of that as well. But he was convicted of misdemeanor assault against Paul Pollard, not as a police officer. So this case was brought. The basis of the
case was what?
Brought, the 1983 case. The basis of their the defendants, their appellee's summary judgment was the Heck Doctrine barred the 1983 case because they argued that the plaintiff, a verdict in the civil case, the 1983 case, would necessarily imply the invalidity of the assault. But we argue that that's not the case. If you look to the Bush case, in which Chief Judge Stewart was the presiding, was writing for the court, it was a simple assault in that case. And Judge Stewart noted that the dispositive question in a Heck analysis is whether would a finding that Burden's use of force was objectively unreasonable necessary call into question the validity of Ballard's conviction for simple assault upon Pollard. If it is possible for Ballard to have assaulted Bowling and for Burden's shooting of Ballard to have been objectively unreasonable, then Heck does not bar Ballard's claim. That's the exact same thing here. But also, sorry, Joe.
In the underlying criminal trial,
yes,
it did reduce down to a simple assault. But I remember reading in the briefs that it seemed like the government and the defendant at the jury charge stage accepted as an additional element that it not that there wouldn't be assault if Buchanan had acted in self-defense. So the jury had that, whether that's an element of the offense or not. If I'm right on what happened, that became an element that had to be proven. And therefore, their finding here would be that he wasn't acting in self-defense, and it would seem like an excessive force case would necessarily be inconsistent with that jury finding that he wasn't acting in self-defense. Am I right on the premise that the underlying simple assault was enhanced by both parties by virtue of the jury charge?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think you're right there.
Okay.
I think if you look at the jury instruction that was listed in Judge Girola's opinion as well as in the Mississippi Court of Appeals case, says that if they found that Mr. Buchanan knowingly purposefully attempted to cause harm to Mr. Pollin, a third person, Mr. Pollin, then you must find. I think there were a lot of discussions about whether or not Mr. Buchanan acted necessarily in self-defense as it related to the aggravated assault charges.
Okay, so they didn't, that element was not part of what the jury had to find, because I guess the general Heck doctrine that I'd understood before this case was that if there's a finding that an individual is a criminal aggressor, then that would be inconsistent with his claim that he suffered a constitutional violation in the police-citizen encounter that follows.
Not necessarily.
Because you say chronologically the tasing was the excessive force, and that was separate from the shooting chronologically?
Yes, the tasing and the shooting. Now, for purposes of here, the court, even Judge Girola, as well as the Court of Appeals, they adopted one set of facts to assume that was the simple assault, which was him, Mr. Buchanan, charging with the baseball bat. That's disputed. That's clearly disputed testimony. There's a deposition of
isn't that inherent in the finding of assault on another person, whether he's police officer or not, that he was engaged with that in some sort of assault, whether it's a baseball bat or his fist?
Yes, Your Honor, but if you look at the record as a whole, there are a number of different set of encounters that Mr. Buchanan had with Mr. Pollin or Officer Pollin that could be assault.
Right. He assaulted, they tased him, he continued to assault, and they shot him.
Well, that's disputed, Your Honor.
Well, because that was what was tried before this jury, wasn't it? And the Court of Intermediate Appeals upheld it.
Well, the Mississippi Court of Appeals, when it addressed the issue, it looked to see whether or not there were sufficient facts in the record to justify the lesser charge for simple assault. And then it just went to one set of facts that could have supported the simple assault charge. But there was another set of facts as well that very well could have. The Court of Appeals said, well, because they didn't know what the jury found, there weren't any special interrogatories. So they said, well, the jury must have found that the bat was not a deadly weapon. Then it said, well, the jury must have found that Mr. Buchanan did not know that Mr. Pollin was a police officer. Another step forward, the jury may well could have found that Mr. Buchanan never charged him or never swung the bat at him. That was mere speculation on everyone's part, because we don't know what the jury actually found.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about the taser videos. Are the videos in the summary judgment record from the tasers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are those the only videos in the summary judgment record? There was no camcord recorder or whatever on the dashboard of one of the police cars videoing this?
No, Your Honor, just a taser video.
So two taser videos?
Yes, Your Honor.
Two tasers were used. And those are in the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
What core of facts in the actual conviction do you say are subsumed in this chronology? I mean, I heard your argument in terms of the varying sequences, but what's the narrow universe of facts that you say the jury found on that count?
Well, Your Honor, we don't know, because if you look at the jury instructions, the aggravated assault one said he swung the bat at Mr. Pollin.
Well, I know, I mean, you don't know, and I'm not asking you to get in the jury's head, but sort of necessarily, right or wrong, that was a conviction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Of the simple assault. So, I mean, in order for the jury to convict him, I mean, there's some narrow subset of facts, presumably, which you would have to accede to that that conviction encompasses, maybe not necessarily in time, and I'm just asking you, you know, what would, I mean, at a minimum, they had to found it in one of these sequences, he was an aggressor.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor. When, if you look in the record, page 3286, Officer Brandt indicated when they first approached, when Officer Pollen first approached Mr. Buchanan, he was swinging the bat and he was agitated. Record 3312, Pollen described his action as being very aggressive. Record 3336, 3337, they said Mr. Buchanan was aggressively holding the bat towards him. This is prior to Officer Stratira coming to the scene. That all very right. well could have been the bat.
All right, let me ask you this. All right, do I understand your argument to be that because this is a sequence along a continuum, that even assuming the conviction, you know, on the assault, that that's one increment of time and actions between the parties, that even if Heck barred that, that you're saying your 1983 claim can be sustained because you can somehow fit into this other part of the continuum that necessarily wasn't decided by the jury. Is that what you're arguing? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to understand it.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. I think if the court says that Heck doesn't bar the case, but it says that qualified immunity bars against those officers, I think we can proceed against the municipality, Gulfport Police Department.
But if we took the view that, you know, he's got a conviction and that conviction subsumed, you know, he was an aggressor, and therefore, you know, you're out, period. And I'm just asking whether the sustainability of your claim rises and falls on us not seeing one time snapshot of this sequence, but we've got to agree that there's a continuum, and along that continuum are disputes about what happened. I mean, is that the basis, a basis of your argument?
That is a basis.
All right, because yeah. if we decide that, you know, he's convicted, it's assault, Heck bars it, you're out, right? I mean, you agree with that if we view it that way. So I'm just trying to make sure I understand if you're trying to say we got to look at the case here rather than here, and that somehow you're able to stay in. And I just don't remember seeing a case that frames up that way. Normally we're looking at, you know, a straight line sequence between the officers, the person, that's what we're looking at. If there's a conviction, we look at the elements, et cetera, and we make the call one way or another. So this is just frame. I mean, I haven't seen the video or read the record. I just want to make sure my thinking is aligned with what your argument is.
Right. It's temporal and it's conceptual, temporal, and distinct, Your Honor, because the jury, when the jury found for the simple assault, there are different set of bases of facts in which it could have found simple assault.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure, at least me, exactly. that I'm clear on exactly the scope of your argument. All right. I have no doubt that Mr. Whitfield will give us a different perspective. You're up.
Surely count on that. Let me just say at the outset, on behalf of these defendants, I certainly am sensitive to the presence vel non of the city of Gulfport perhaps being in this courtroom. At least from my standpoint and my perspective, Judge Barksdale, I would consider the plaintiffs as having abandoned the claims that they have pursued against the city of Gulfport. Personally, I'm here on behalf of these police officers, and I succeeded in the court below.
Well, the other defendants filed this brief that incorporates all of the arguments of the officers, et cetera.
Yes, sir.
I don't see them here arguing, and I don't know what all the other claims were. I can understand what they might be, but this whole case has been briefed on a excessive force claim.
Yes, sir.
And you agree, however, don't you, that if we just apply qualified immunity to these three officers you represent, or how many you represent, we've got to remand it back to district court for further proceedings on all the other claims.
Judge, I don't know that I've given that a whole lot of thought, but just standing up here before Your Honor this morning, I would simply suggest to you that just as the court did in Ballard, that if the court were to find favorably in front of, as to these particular defendants that I represent here today, which would be the actual hands-on officers, that qualified immunity also would give them dispensation. And since the core facts themselves were in some form or fashion vindicated, then that would certainly, in my view, eviscerate all of the claims that the plaintiffs otherwise would have against the city and against all of the city managers, fathers, and supervisors.
Well, you're here representing, according to your brief, Officer Podlin, Officer Weest, Officer Brandt, and Officer Stakura, but you're also here representing a Lieutenant Craig Peterson. Was he involved in the altercation with Mr. Buchanan?
No, sir.
I didn't think so.
Craig Peterson, Judge, was sued primarily in the complaint over what we believe to be some, you know, very specious allegations that in some form or fashion he fixed the investigation.
Well, but again, it may well be specious, but all we're here on this summary judgment is either Hecht removes the whole case or a subset of officers are entitled to qualified immunity. And if we only find that these subset of officers are entitled to qualified immunity, I think we have to remand the case to district court for further proceedings against this Lieutenant Craig Peterson and the other 774,000 defendants that are in this action.
Judge, if you did that, in my view, at least without having gone back and looked at the Ballard decision, I would say that probably it would be inconsistent with that decision simply because in the Ballard decision, the court did not apply Heck, but the court did ultimately proceed to apply qualified immunity and then simply dismiss the claim. At some point in time, I guess we would be called upon to give the courts our thoughts on that. But as you have said, I am here obviously representing five different police officers, four of which were actually out on the street that evening and had this encounter with Mr. Buchanan. Let me just begin by saying, Your Honors, from a factual standpoint, this event did occur on July the 5th, 2007. And I want to properly place this, I guess, if I can, in the appropriate context. You had three different officers that were on their way to the county jail transporting some individuals that they had just done a by bust on. And on their way, they passed by a relatively congested and very busy part of town, and by their testimony have indicated that they saw Mr. Buchanan out on the side of the road at around 11:30 at night, as I recall on a weekend, with a baseball bat. Swinging that baseball bat in some unknown direction, the testimony of the witnesses are a little bit mushy when it comes to where, how, and all that, but it's pretty categorical in terms of its accepted fact that Mr. Buchanan was in fact swinging a baseball bat on a street corner, or at least on a part of a street corner, on the right-of-way on Highway 49 in Gulfport. Now, that in and of itself warrants and merits some type of investigation on the part of law enforcement officials that are driving by this particular area. He is standing literally almost on the corner with cars passing him by, swinging a baseball bat. That is not the type of a situation that I think you can just drive by and just simply ignore if you're officers of the law. Yes, sir.
Counsel, you can lower just a decibel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But just because the Hecht issue, as Judge Barksdale's pointed out, it's probably important to fast forward to, and there are some nuances.
Yes, sir.
I think, and I don't want to mischaracterize the facts, though, but let's assume the man then is approached and he does put the bat down, because I think that's undisputed. The rest may be what he then does. Does he retrieve it and then charge it? If we fast forward to those facts, I know what interests me most is whether you contend that Hecht applies categorically or whether, as Chief Judge Stewart pointed out, there is doctrine that says you look at a continuum, but you can break into increments the 1983 increment and say that's distinct from the simple assault increment. And if that would be the case, is there a law that allows that distinguishing of Hecht?
All right, Judge, you've asked a question that probably is going to require two answers, okay? All right. Now, the first answer is this, is that certainly you can fast forward from their stop up until the point in time that Mr. Buchanan drops the bat.
Okay.
And there would be a point in time in the fact continuum that the bat was dropped.
Because no police aggressive action had occurred then, no tasing and no shooting, right?
Well, no tasing and no shooting had occurred.
So nothing they're alleging for excessive force could be implicated until after the bat first gets on the ground. That's all I wanted you to do. I don't think their claim could allege any improper police behavior. So your point about them stopping and going up to him is all good.
Absolutely, it's all good. Now, I would suggest to Your Honor this, that part of that fact continuum up until the point in time that Mr. Buchanan actually does drop the bat came with multiple statements on the police officer's part to drop the bat. To drop the bat and to back away from that bat.
Okay.
Now, one particular point that I wanted to certainly highlight is this, is that one of the responses, and this particular response is very clearly recorded on at points in time in terms of the video, not really good quality video, but this particular response is very clearly recorded, and that's Mr. Buchanan with the bat in his hand, backing up somewhat, swinging this bat, and after he is commanded to put the bat down, his response is, "Or what, or for what?" Now, that particular statement does not certainly indicate that there is going to be a particularly cooperative individual that you're going to encounter from here on out. And I would suggest to the court that when police officers walk up to you and they've got a taser on you and they tell you, "Sir, drop that bat," and after having done it multiple times, your response at that point is, "Or what, or for what?" We disagree with the plaintiffs in terms of what he said. I think that he said, "Or what?" They believe that he said, "For what?" But it doesn't really matter. It's a challenging response that I think drives up certainly the suspicion of these officers that they're about to have a problem. Now, at some point in time, he does drop the bat. But if Your Honor has looked at the video and certainly some of the stills, you will see at some point in time Mr. Buchanan does make an aggressive move toward that bat.
This is, you're arguing towards qualified immunity, correct?
Well, I'm arguing towards qualified immunity because I think Judge Girola was correct on both points.
Okay.
As far as Heck is concerned, I would agree with Your Honors all, because y'all, except Your Honor, Judge Hickinson, you haven't been a participant on a Heck doctrine case as far as I can tell. Judge Stewart has been a part of one. Judge Barksdale has been a part of one.
Counsel, I wouldn't underestimate what Judge Higginson knows about Heck. You're going down the wrong track.
I understand that. I don't know that I have seen an opinion specifically from Judge Higginson. I would suggest this, though, that the opinions that I have seen of late out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, there has been a specific reference. I think it's in footnote 13 on the Bush decision, page 23 on the Ballard decision, which very, very, very clearly and categorically specifically mentions a temporal association with the events that ultimately led up to what the plaintiffs are claiming is the excessive force. Now, if one superimposes over the top of the excessive force claim in this particular court, if one superimposes over the top of it the fact that Mr. Buchanan was indicted, charged, and ultimately convicted with a lesser included offense of simple assault, which incorporates justification or self-defense. It incorporates justification or self-defense. He was convicted of simple assault, even though it's a misdemeanor. A jury has found that nothing preceded the events that ultimately led up to the maturity of the basis of his conviction, which would have justified his resistance, i.e. self-defense. Now, if the court were to find in some form or fashion that any one of those events ultimately leading up to the fact that he was arrested and then ultimately charged and convicted for simple assault, if one were to assume that something was done in that time continuum, even though it may be a temporal, even disassociation, a disassociated fact, I believe it's a temporal association. You cannot split up these particular facts and parse them out and looking certainly at the events that happened out there that night with 20/20 hindsight. The facts that ultimately led up to this would have and did warrant The argument at his criminal trial, at Mr. Buchanan's criminal trial, that he was entitled to defend himself. He did argue at trial that he was entitled to defend himself. The jury found against him on that entitlement to defend oneself. To me, if the jury has found, almost in a collateral concept, if the jury has found that he was not entitled to the self-defense defense at trial, then all of the arguments that the plaintiffs in this particular case make relative to whether he had the bat in his hand, whether he didn't have the bat in his hand, whether he was doing nothing wrong, whether he was breaking no law, whether the officers were out there and didn't have any reason to tase him, all of those arguments would have all been rolled up and have a temporal association just as they did in the Bush and the Ballard decisions. Now, admittedly, in the Bush and the Ballard decisions, the court did find that there was a temporal disassociation between the actual facts of the case that ultimately resulted in a conviction, a criminal conviction, and then the excessive force claim. But the court in both of those cases highlighted and certainly reached out and incorporated its prior holdings of Hudson and Sappington and Haynes and some of the other decisions that the Fifth Circuit has cited, and have incited specifically the fact that in those other cases, a temporal association actually existed so that the Heck Doctrine would apply. This court in Arnold, Judge Stewart, a part of the panel in Arnold. In the Arnold decision, the Arnold court felt that there was a temporal association between the facts of the case and the application of Heck. I do believe very, very passionately and specifically that in this particular case, the Heck Doctrine applies. Judge Girola found that, and I think it's pretty clear that from a temporal association standpoint, the Heck Doctrine applies, and this case is over. On the qualified immunity issue, I see I got a few more minutes left. On the qualified immunity issue, Judge Girola, I think, probably said it best when he indicated that there was not anything that happened out there on the evening, even if one were not to apply Heck. Nothing happened out on the street that night that would otherwise implicate a clearly incompetent police officer. And that's really what you've got to look at. Were the actions and was the conduct that happened out there that night when the video evidence, and highlighting the video evidence, I think is reasonably important, even though I don't think that it's necessarily a critical to this court's finding. But if the court looks at the Poole decision that actually specifically dealt with the existence and the concept of video evidence, if the court actually looks at the video side by side that we went to a great deal of expense and time to prepare, and one of the things that I wanted to point out a minute ago in terms of the facts is this, is that only until an officer actually takes his taser out. Now, you remember the testimony from Podlin and also Statura, particularly Podlin, that both he and West walked up to Mr. Buchanan, and Officer Podlin pulled out his taser, and he held it down behind him. Officer Weiss, when they were walking up to Mr. Buchanan, he was behind Officer Podlin, providing what he called lethal cover. His weapon was out and behind him. It was only until Officer Podlin pulls his taser out after multiple commands to drop the bat that the taser itself is activated, thus activating the camera. When the camera comes on, the court is given a bird's eye view of what's going on in terms of the exchanges between the officer and Mr. Buchanan. It's at that particular point in time that you can see on the camera multiple occasions where Mr. Buchanan is told to drop the bat. He never drops the bat until the very, very, very last second after Officer Statura in a separate vehicle in uniform comes up to his east, not with Officer Podlin and not with Officer Weiss. When he gets out of his car, he sees what's going on, and by his testimony, he takes his taser out, and that's when he trains his taser on Mr. Buchanan. That's when you get the two views. And what we did is we synchronized those views so that your honors could see that. And you could see exactly what's happening. And it's very clear, given the frame by frame by frame by frame exhibit that we attached to our motion for summary judgment, it's Exhibit G. Exhibit F is the videotape, but Exhibit G, if the court will take the time to look at that video, we have slowed the frames down on that so that the court can see it. We've got still frames. If one were to look at the actual still frames, which I brought with me, you can see that the events that led up to Mr. Buchanan being tased reveal that he is actually literally reaching down to grab the bat. Now, if that is not aggressive behavior, which warrants further police involvement, at least to overcome the amount of resistance that they perceive that they're about to encounter, I don't know what will. Judge Girola, many courts all over the country have given at least verification that the use of a taser and the use of, I think Judge Girola called it a stun gun, that is a non-lethal device. In this particular case, Mr. Buchanan was able to pull not one, but two of the leads out. That's very, very rare that somebody actually can do it with one. He did it twice. And then on the video, and this is when the quality starts to dissipate a little bit, but you can see enough of the stills, and you can see enough of the video to indicate that at the time, or at least to see, at the time that Mr. Buchanan was shot, he had a bat in his hand, and he was charging these officers. Now, if that is not the threat of serious bodily injury that warrants shooting somebody, I don't know what it will under the Harlow versus Fitzgerald, the formula that we have been applying for the last 30 years. These officers, those officers that evening, they had a right to expect compliance on the part of Mr. Buchanan, not only to stop what he was doing and to answer their questions, but then to drop the bat, and then not to attack them. And when he did all of the above and he got shot, he cannot be heard to complain today that he has a right to recover on a constitutional tort, essentially. So
what other claims are in the complaint that would relate to the shooting? For example, violation of Gulfport police policy for using a pistol in this situation, or, for example, failure to properly train. What claims are in this complaint other than excessive force? And we've heard about violating the police policy of not getting out of your vehicle if you're not in uniform.
Judge, I've got the complaint with me, but there are probably about, I would estimate, between 18 and 20 separate different sub-complaints that are incorporated into this complaint. The primary ones, obviously, are going to be the excessive force claims under Section 1983. But the plaintiffs in this case, Judge, they have alleged a litany of assertions which they believe entitle them to recover, not only against these police officers, but against the city. And there are some allegations in the complaint which complain about negligent supervision or improper supervision, improper training, improper monitoring.
Right, but I think it's getting back to the first question, which do they all relate to the excessive force moment, or, for example, your client Peterson, would that be something completely independent of the aggressive actions alleged at the scene? Or do they all reduce to that? So if we found qualified immunity as to them, there could be no other complaint of the 18 to 20.
Judge, I, with respect, I would suggest to the court that if this court finds Heck dispositive, and if this court finds that these officers out there are entitled to qualified immunity for what happened, then in my judgment, that dispatches the case. And the reason that it dispatches the case is because, let's just take the conspiracy argument that has been argued, or at least been alleged in the complaint. How can you conspire to do something that ultimately was of no moment, of no violation, of no problem? How can one conspire to violate something that was not a violation? How can one negligently supervise something that wasn't wrong?
Well, can I ask one other question? I mean, I think one answer would be, but again, it's what's in the complaint, would be if someone after the fact obstructed an investigation, then it wouldn't be defeated by the fact that there was no underlying offense.
Well, Judge, I think that if the court will look at some of the precedents, particularly in Poole, and even the most recent decision of this court in Elizondo, where it talks about the elements that are needed relative to a a 1983 action. As I remember, I think specifically an injury is required.
Right.
Now, in this particular case, I don't see how Mr. Buchanan would have otherwise been injured as a consequence of anything that, that Lieutenant Peterson did. If the officers are ultimately determined to be within their constitutional perimeters and how they interact with Mr. Buchanan, and if this court vindicates their conduct, which I think the court should, then as far as I'm concerned, there is nothing. This case essentially loses its substance completely. And all the allegations about whether they shouldn't have been stopping Mr. Buchanan and they should have been following the policies and procedures and not stopping, Judge, I think that at the end of the day, those are red herring arguments. They've got nothing to do with the constitutional assertions before
right,
the court.
Mr. Whitfield, I'm going to stop you. I think you have responded to Judge Higginson's question. I think you are sort of going back to an earlier spot.
Thank you,
I believe we have your argument. We appreciate your illuminating us. All right, we'll
Thank
be
you,
back to Mr. Sweet. You've got the rebuttal.
May it please the court. As Bush,
is that correct that you have approximately 20 claims in this action?
Yes, Your Honor.
Name some of them for us.
Excessive force.
Okay, we're aware of that one.
The failure to train, lack of policy and procedure, just to name a few, mostly stemming from the excessive force.
But the conspiracy claim we've just heard about, that's under something other than 1983? It's a special section?
I believe, Your Honor, that is under 1983.
But a subset of 1983 different from excessive force?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. All right.
Yes, Your Honor. As Bush stated, Bush cited Ballard as stating that...
Well, let me ask you one other question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do all of these other 19 or 20 claims, do they all turn on the actions against Mr. Buchanan that night?
No, Your Honor.
All right, give me an example of one that doesn't.
You have Mr. Peterson, who there's evidence that Mr. Peterson may have did some things to alter the statements or knew that the statements may have been invalid, but those things occurred outside of the actions of the 1983 excessive force actions.
Okay, what's the claim against Peterson then?
It would be lack of supervision and failure to train.
Wait and a minute. Conspiracy. His altering statements is lack of supervision and failure to train?
No, Your Honor, that would be the conspiracy.
All right.
As Bush stated, Bush cited Ballard stating that a 1983 claim would not necessarily imply the invalidity of a resisting arrest conviction and therefore would not be barred by Heck if the factual basis for the conviction is temporarily and conceptually distinct from the excessive force claim. And that is what we are asserting here today, that the actions were conceptually distinct. In our case, Mr. Buchanan was approached by Officer West and Officer Potland. At that time, there are things in the evidence which support that the assault could have occurred at that point. Mr. Buchanan was seen holding the bat, and as appellee counsel said, he said, or what? He was doing things that were described by the officers as being agitated or and acting aggressively. When Officer Shatura approached on the scene, he had on his police uniform, his Class A uniform, driving a marked police car with the blue lights. When he got out the car, Buchanan placed the bat down. At that point, there is a temporarily and conceptually distinction of facts. The time before he put the bat down, he complied with orders and put the bat down. At that point in time, there's a distinction between an assault, which evidence supports could have occurred before that.
Let me ask you this. What we know that the videos are in there, Counsel Zinnick. What else, just give me a 1, 2, 3, 4, does the summary judgment record consist of? I mean, we've got videos. What else?
There are summary judgment motion is based off testimony from the officers, trial court.
Well, I mean, be more specific. I mean, do we have the depositions of the officers? Do we have yours? I'm just asking you, give me, don't tell me what they said. I just want to know, 1, 2, 3, 4, what is it? We've got videos, I know that.
Right.
So do we have your client's deposition?
We do not have our client's deposition attached, but we do have depositions of the officers as well as trial transcripts from.
Give me 1, 2, 3, 4. All the officers that you've sued, their depositions are in the record?
We have Officer Pollin deposition, Officer West deposition, Officer Shatera's deposition. We also have the deposition of Deborah Charette, who testified that Mr. Buchanan was not acting.
I just wanted to know what, all right, with respect to other than the claims that derive from the excessive force, the ones you talk about training, et cetera, what summary judgment evidence, if any, is what's the character of the evidence that's in the record, if at all?
Well, you have the testimony of the officers where they changed their testimony, where they did not know. They said that he never put the bat down, and then when he saw the videotape.
No. I'm talking about your claims that you've been asked about otherwise that you say don't relate to specifically the excessive force moments. I'm just trying to get a picture of what the summary judgment record. So other than the officers, is there some others, for example, you've sued the city of Gulfport, et cetera, are there depositions or interrogatories of other people beyond the officers that relate to the other character of claims that are in here? That's all I'm trying to.
Yes, Your Honor. We have the MBI reports and Officer Peterson's deposition testimony as well.
All right. All right, Mr. Sweet. Time's up. All right, we have it.